Whether you're a pro athlete, an exhausted parent, or you spend all day in an office chair, CBDMD wants to give you the support you need to make it through the day. CBD Freeze and Recover are an outstanding duo of topical products with specialized formulas to provide targeted relief where it matters most, and to make it even easier to try Freeze, Recover, and every other CBDMD product. You can take 25% off your next order when you use the promo code NBA at checkout. Once again, that's cbdmd.com, promo code NBA for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD products from CBDMD. All right, welcome on. We have much to discuss here on Hollinger and Duncan today. First, the G League Ignite played their first game. I didn't get a chance to see it, but John did. I wanted to just get his impressions on the overall format. And then we also have to finish up our rankings of which teams we'd want to be a fan of. Also pick which teams we think are most likely to move up or down, or which teams have the most variation going forward. And then continuing our tradition, ruling a team out of the playoffs, each of us will, and we will give a little bit of a post-mortem on the season for these teams, which I'm sure their fan base appreciates, as we are now like one third of the way through the season. But yeah, let's talk about this G League Ignite. I was going to watch the game a little bit later today. It just finished up, actually. And for those who don't know, this is the NBA's attempt to provide an alternative to college basketball. Actually, pay these players. They're coached by Brian Shaw, based in Walnut Creek, just east of Oakland. Also provide an alternative to going to the Australian League, and some pretty hefty contracts given out. And the league wants to kind of provide an avenue for top five picks. So what were your initial impressions of what this whole thing looked like as we went into this G League bubble in Orlando?
Yeah, so I would say mostly positive. A couple of the things I worried about coming into this were how this Ignite team would be relative to other teams in the league that could sign players essentially to their G League team, or assign first round picks or two ways, or other players who might be expected to be among the best players in the G League. And so how would a team that essentially assigned a bunch of veterans around a bunch of 18-year-olds be able to compete at that level? And on that score, I thought they did pretty well. I mean, they beat a Santa Cruz team that had two active NBA players playing for them, and Jordan Poole and Nico Mannion, had Jeremy Lin on their roster. It should be a decent to good G League team. And G League Ignite beat them. And it didn't seem fluky at all, like, you know, and they were playing real basketball. And I think it's going to be good for these players to be in this system, for Jonathan Kuminga, Jalen Green, Isaiah Todd, Dacian Nix to be in this system.
Yeah, and I think maybe one thing that's kind of cool is that it seems like they've been together practicing for much longer than these other G League teams. It's been really kind of rushed, getting guys into the bubble, signing guys. Some NBA teams don't even have a team. They're assigning players to other teams in this bubble. So maybe despite the fact that they have these 18-year-olds, maybe they're a little bit more prepared to play than the teams they're going against.
Yeah, that could be. It's going to be interesting to see how, as this project goes on over these coming weeks, if they have an advantage that they then lose, or do they gain ground as these teenagers get more experience playing against grown men?
Yeah, because that's the big concern was you get these guys in there and they're not going to look good enough, right? Like that they'd be better off going to college because they can showcase their skills. They're not going up against other players. And that despite the fact that they may actually be getting a better, quote unquote, education and more preparation to succeed when they're drafted, that they just, the optics aren't as good, and therefore their draft position could fall. But I mean, we don't need to get into the specific guys. We only saw one game here, but did it look like these guys were overwhelmed, or did it look like they're going to be able to compete and showcase and look good in this environment?
I mean, the guys all look like they belonged on the court, right? There wasn't any case where you saw a guy and you're like, whoa, like he's like, this dude shouldn't be out here. So I thought that was really encouraging. And I think from the NBA's perspective, it's much easier to compare apples to apples, watching these guys play with basically NBA rules in an NBA system. You get a much better feel. I think everyone knows how to calibrate going from G League to the NBA in terms of certain things they see. People who have worked in the league have done that enough to have at least a decent idea. And then the only thing that's different is we haven't had teenage prodigies really playing in the G League. So that's the one thing that's maybe a little different.
How did they handle the mix of playing with these vets? For those who don't know, they're players like Jarrett Jack, for example, players who maybe are trying to get back to the league, but also are maybe trying to transition into more of a coaching situation, but are good vets, good mentors, but they're playing as well. How did they handle the mix of playing time and roles with those guys compared to the prospects?
So they distributed the minutes pretty evenly today, and it didn't seem like a big issue because, say, so their most veteran guys were Bobby Brown and Jarrett Jack, who both played point guard. So those guys alternated minutes, right? But Kuminga and Green started and played the majority of the game, and then Nix and Todd came off the bench and were essentially coming in, for like an 18-minute shift, like a regular sort of rotation guy shift. So there wasn't anything really questionable happening with that.
Yeah. Did it seem like they're like trying to win the game or showcase these players?
I think it was more trying to win the game. Like, Green and Kuminga started because I think they genuinely thought those were two of their best five players.
Yeah, and also those are the real, like, premium prospects. Those are the guys who might go in the top five. Todd and Nix, you know better than I do where they're kind of projected, but they're not considered potential future stars. And so I think there's going to be, those guys are going to play. Like, the really good guys, I think, are always going to play regardless. But it also seems like, from what you're saying, that they deserve to be out there.
Yeah. I think where you could run into this a little more is if you have somebody who's really struggling, and they're, I think, given their mission, a guy like that is going to play 15 minutes no matter what.
Yeah. No, and that's how it should be on any G League team as well, right? If you really have someone that you want to develop, like, the point of the entire G League, not just this Ignite team, is actually to develop players. And
so, I mean, we've certainly done the same thing, and everyone who's worked in the league has, where we send a guy down to the G League and basically tell the coach, this dude's playing 30 minutes, and, you know, unless he does something completely horrible where you have to, like, punish him by benching him, but if he misses three shots in a row, he's staying in the game, you know what I mean? And you know, communicate that pretty clearly what the expectation is. So to me, this is kind of no different than that.
Well, all right. Anything else that stuck out to you, or should we move on here?
I think we can move on. I do think it did just visually. I mean, it looked kind of a lot like the NBA bubble, which I guess we could have expected. And I just thought it went off pretty well today.
Well, all right, let's now get into then the continuation of our little series here, a two-parter on who we would most want to be a fan of. Go back and listen to last week's. You wanted to hear some of the criteria that we're using, but basically, to reiterate, this is who we would want to be a fan of personally over the next 5 years. So whether it's wins, stars, watchable players, prospects, and then the probability of improving or declining the performance, and management and coaching, obviously, if you have faith in those six in it as well. So the team I want to start with here, we kind of finished a little more than half the league last time.
Yeah.
I don't think either of us had the Toronto Raptors in the top half of the league. I know I didn't. I had them at number 19. What about
you? I think I had them exactly 15th.
Okay.
So, yeah, they're a tough one because well-managed, have a core of, like, pretty good guys in their 20s, but nothing really coming up. It does seem like the championship is already behind them, and that was sort of the pinnacle moment for any Raptor fan, right? So what's ahead of you now? You're not getting Giannis. Masai might leave in a year, although I would say the management that is there, that, like, they've built up a good bench in their front office.
Yeah.
I don't think that's necessarily catastrophic at this point.
Yeah. They just extended Bobby Webster as well.
Yeah. So Anunoby, Siakam, Van Vliet, that's probably a pretty good team. I just don't know what else they can add to that mixture at this point. They're going to have to be pretty creative. Now they have the coaching in the front office to maybe have that creativity happen. You know, maybe they're able to pull off another deal, you know, the way they did for Kawhi somehow, or do something at a lower level that at least pushes them forward again. But they're definitely facing a somewhat challenging scenario. So I don't know. I felt like it wasn't depressing, but it was more not super optimistic at the same time.
Yeah, well, if they would just play Paul Watson more, they would really jump up the rankings. But apparently that's not in the cards.
You're going for Yuta Watanabe's minutes, and we're going to have a problem if this continues.
Yeah, he might have a problem if he can't shoot more than 30% on two-pointers. Just kidding. Yeah, I've enjoyed the way that he's played. He's been a really smart player. I like the way he competes. He's like a good kind of connector type of guy. But I think a lot of this just comes down to what your perspective is. I think you might even say, John, that of all the teams going forward here over the next 2 or 3 years, once you get 4 or 5 years out, I think it's a fool's errand to try and predict. But we might have the best idea of what the Raptors are going to be over the next 2 or 3 years. And it's just, how do you evaluate that?
We think so. I mean, the one wild card is, I mean, they are still pretty well set up to make trades to get another piece.
Yeah.
And Toronto is a team, they're not going to be at the top of anyone's list, but I do think they are a place where star players will accept being traded there. And so they have that variable in their corner still. But that's an unlikely scenario, you have to think.
What assets do they have that makes you think they would be in a position to trade for a star? Siakam?
They have Anunoby, Siakam, Van Vliet under contract, yes. And then they still basically retain their draft picks. And so they still have the ability to make these trades that other teams have already made. So they haven't burned through their asset pile, is, I guess, my main point. And they have, you know, they've set themselves up with flexibility, with lots of expirings. They've given themselves the ability to do different things if the opportunity comes up.
Well, to me, I think their greatest variability is more internal. Just look at the guys that they have now. Fred VanVleet was undrafted. Siakam was, what, 27th, 28th in 2016. And Anunoby was 23rd. Mm-hmm. Not 24th, much to the Denver Nuggets' chagrin, as they then selected Tyler Lydon. So if they can just create some more of the, you know, Norman Powell is the 46th pick, you get another couple of players in there, because some of their problem has just been not having enough guys this year. If they can just find some more of those gems in the way that they have, when we talked about it last year, we said they're one of the top two or three developmental organizations in basketball. That to me is where these guys might have a little bit of an opportunity to move up. But still, generally, I mean, you might even get a Pascal Siakam with that, but Siakam isn't, you know, despite last year, probably not an all-NBA level player, neither is Van Vliet. So, I kind of think they're going to be in between like 500 and the fourth seed, you know, the eighth and the fourth seed for the next like 3 or 4 years. And just, it's a question of, do they blow it up or just kind of stick with that? And we already won our championship and everyone likes these guys, so let's just, you know, keep winning some games. It's hard to see. You kind of know what you're getting, and maybe for me at least, like, I kind of like a little bit of variability and like, let's see what's going to happen here. Like Toronto, I felt just pretty secure this year about what they were. They underperformed a little bit, but most of their good guys have been about what you'd expect.
Yeah, you're right. You don't see a ton of variability. It's just kind of a known, you know, you're getting something decent to good. You just, the high end outcomes just don't really seem to be there.
Yeah, but having at least already won a championship, that's a little bit different than, you know, your early 2010s Atlanta Hawks type of teams. I think we're in relative agreement on them. Who else? I mean, I'm kind of down in the they were my 19th overall team.
Talk about San Antonio?
No, they are, I have them in this next tier, my tier five, that I kind of characterize this as teams that have some young guys that are decent, but still need some more pieces, and they don't really have a special asset. Although one of these teams may be moving out of there soon. We'll get to that team, but
okay.
Let's talk about San Antonio. I mean, I have them in this tier 19 to 24, which, despite the fact that they have like some nice young guys, but they don't have a star, and it's hard to see what their path is with the current roster to get much above just mid-tier, kind of how they're playing this year.
I would more or less agree with that. I guess I was slightly more optimistic on them. I felt like they were bringing enough guys along that they were positioning themselves to potentially do bigger things. I mean, they're looking at having like $50 million in cap room or close to it. I mean, I know in San Antonio, cap room doesn't get you as far as some other places, but I just think they have the flexibility now to do some different things. They have some good-ish young players. I agree with your assessment. I don't know if any of them are good enough to be one of the three best players on a good team. That's really the issue there. Maybe Derek White, maybe Devin Vassell becomes that, but that's probably the biggest reason to not be that excited. And then I would say the succession issue looms over them too.
Yeah. You don't know what's going to happen with Greg Popovich, although perhaps his departure could lead to maybe a little bit more of a recalibration as far as getting higher in the draft. DeMar DeRozan has still been pretty good for them. You don't know what's going to happen with him. Aldridge, it looks like he's about done now, and he's 35, yeah. So he's probably not really part of this either. And, you know, I haven't been, you know, they still have succeeded with this drafting at the end of the first round with a lot of these guys, but I also have not been particularly impressed by, like, the creativity of Brian Wright and company since, you know, RC Buford kind of moved into another role in 16, 17, that range. And the out of organization transactions that they've made, I think have been pretty poor since then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they hardly make any out of organization transactions. I mean, that's been, right. That's been their history, right?
They signed like Pau Gasol,
Gasol move was a mistake. Yeah, clearly.
Yeah, there's a few of those sorts. I mean, the Kawhi trade I thought was entirely underwhelming to prioritize DeRozan instead of getting more assets. I mean, these guys would look a lot better if they had just traded Kawhi to the Lakers for the package that eventually became AD or close to that.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue. Maybe the Spurs should be hired because you at least know they're going to be competent and they have some young guys. I enjoy some of the role players they have. They just, if they could get a star, then they would be really dangerous because they have all these great young role players, but you kind of need a star in the NBA. That's kind of the theme of this group here. And another one that I would put in there as well would be the Chicago Bulls. I think they're kind of right in that same range. I would probably put them below San Antonio at this point, just because San Antonio at least is competent. And, you know, I like several of the players that San Antonio has more than Chicago. And maybe Chicago, part of it is what you think of Zach LaVine, but he's only got a year and a half left on his contract now. And he's kind of like the new age Monte Ellis in some ways, scores a lot, but, you know, unclear.
And people complain when he doesn't make the All-Star game.
Yeah, kind of unclear. And now, to Levine's credit, he does hit threes off the dribble. He hasn't really been in a competent ecosystem. They've actually been like an above average offense at times this season. The defense has really fallen off. Mm-hmm. So maybe he deserves a little bit more credit than he gets, but he's not going to be like, if he's your best player, not making the playoffs. I think you could feel pretty secure about that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I had Chicago in the 20s for a lot of the same reasons you mentioned. I think there's a little more optimism just that a Chicago team with a clean cap maybe has a chance to get some things done in free agency.
Yeah.
And then they do have, you know, Patrick Williams. You can at least talk yourself into some high-end outcomes.
The other thing I think that would be really interesting for them, and part of why I wasn't as high on the Spurs, is the Spurs are kind of stuck in the middle here. And, you know, maybe the new draft rules will give you a chance to move up anyway. But for Chicago, I actually think with these injuries to Carter and Markkanen, and they are one of the few teams, I think, that could move on from some veterans like Satoransky and Thad Young and Garrett Temple. You know, Woj was reporting yesterday that there's a frustration that there just aren't players that are going to be available on the market. And I think Chicago, if they're realistic, yeah, they might even make the play-in potentially if they really push hard. But you're not going to beat Atlanta or Toronto or Indiana or whoever that 7th or 8th seed is going to be. You're not going to beat them twice in a row unless you just really get lucky. So why push for the play-in? And I think I was talking about this with Tim Bontemps yesterday. I think there's a lot of value in potentially zagging right now and actually trying to sell off those pieces. They've got two of their best young players out anyway. You know, making the 10th seed on the back of Thaddeus Young, who's 32 years old, like, what does that do for you? And I'm hopeful that Arturas has the kind of creativity and the mandate from ownership to go in that direction. That, you know, his having some new ownership or new blood in at GM is maybe a reason for optimism. So if the Bulls could kind of go in the opposite direction, get themselves another top five pick here, and then you've got Williams and, you know, Kobe White's okay, Levine, maybe one of the two young bigs is good, you add another piece, and then maybe it starts to get more intriguing for them.
Yeah, add a free agent or two on top of that too. Yeah.
Their cap space this summer, they are looking at about $30 million if they were to move on from Thad Young and Satoransky, who have non-guarantees. But I actually, John, that's another great reason to trade those guys, is because you also get some cap space by trading them, which you don't if you know, presumably you'd want to trade them for expiring contracts, or you take back something bad and maybe get another asset as well. But if you want to try to, you know, maybe get into the restricted free agent market this year or something, you kind of need to move on from those guys. So it all makes so much sense to me.
Yeah.
But, we'll see. They also have Lauri Markkanen's $20 million cap hold. If they decide not to do that, they could have $50 million in space.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting decision. I think they should be taking calls on him, figuring out which way they want to go there.
Yeah, last year we did a segment on who are the most confounding players to us, and Markkanen was among
he's
them.
Definitely,
and
right up there, yeah.
And you know what? I still have no fucking clue. I mean, part of that is just because he can't stay healthy. If you're finding yourself feeling like you've watched every piece of media that's out there at this point in the pandemic, I highly recommend that you give Masterclass a try. My wife loves it. She's done Margaret Atwood's awesome writing class. There's Steph Curry on shooting and ball handling, Serena Williams on tennis, tons of cooking classes with great downloadable materials that are just as good as a high-end cookbook, but come with fantastic video lessons. These lessons are about 10 to 15 minutes in length, so you can fit them in every day if you want to. And you can either just watch the videos, learn more, kind of go the polymath route, or you can really get into something. Use Masterclass as your start to become a true expert with all the downloadable materials, the exercises that come with these classes. And right now you can get unlimited access to every Masterclass with 15% off an annual membership. As a Hollinger and Duncan listener, go to masterclass.com/PR. Easy to remember, /PR, because John invented it. That's masterclass.com/PR for 15% off on Masterclass. So I've been out in Montana for the last month, watching basketball games at night, trying to get a couple hours of skiing in during the day. And this is the first time I've ever done this much skiing on consecutive days, really trying to get better at this sport late in life. Don't ask for the videos, I'm not very good. But the one thing that's been able to keep me going is Theragun. Those of you who have been on the slopes know that you just use a bunch of different muscles that you don't really use anywhere else when you're skiing or snowboarding. My wife uses it as well. And so when you get that soreness, break out the Theragun. We've got the Gen 4 with that beautiful OLED screen. It's super quiet. And for my money, it's better than getting a massage. And it's also way easier and way less expensive as well. I've been using it for about a year now. And whether it's weightlifting, my wife's trail running, snow sports, or just soreness from sitting at your desk all day, the Theragun is the best thing that I know to get rid of it, make you feel fresher. The way to get started with them and to try it for 30 days, starting at only $199, go to theragun.com/PER right now. Use your number /PER because John invented that. You can get your Gen 4 Theragun today at theragun.com/PER. That's theragun.com/PER. All right, what's another team that you have in this range that we should talk about?
Cleveland?
Yeah, this is another team where their early success this year was kind of based on this defense that was forcing a billion turnovers, and that was, you know, it wasn't Darius Garland and Colin Sexton who were making that happen, right? And, Larry Nance is out now. They're another team that maybe could start going the opposite direction. They're down to 10 and 15 now, but you feel like Dan Gilbert has some aspirations of making the playoffs, you would think, or at least making the play and kind of setting the narrative that things are going well. I guess, I mean, it really, though, ultimately comes down to they have like this kind of four-man core now of Garland, Sexton, Okoro, and Jared Allen, with another few pieces like Dylan Windler. But it kind of comes down to, what do you think of those guys? What are they going to evolve into? What do you think of that?
I'm still a little lukewarm on that. Sexton's definitely been better. I mean, Sexton is probably the most Gilbert Arenas-like player since Gilbert Arenas. He's just not nearly as good as Gilbert Arenas was right now. Because he just, I mean, the passing just isn't there. And defensively,
he's not shooting any threes lately either, which is kind of weird.
I mean, Cleveland's whole team just stopped shooting threes, which is bizarre.
Considering who their coach is, it's not entirely bizarre. although, to his credit, actually, he had a very good quote about the idea of Darius Garland taking floaters and like why that's a good shot or not. I'm not saying it may just be more that he thinks that this is the way to win with this group than that he doesn't believe in three pointers. But and it's not like the Memphis teams that he coached were big 3-point shooting teams. But I do think JB has a little bit more of an old school style, but he also gets old school results as well.
I would say that's an apt description.
So, I mean, let's say these guys, that four-man core continues to develop at a normal type of rate. What do you see that evolving into?
You know, can Sexton Garland be an above-average backcourt combo? I guess I have more questions about, like, what is Garland, especially next to Sexton? I would love to see, like, Lonzo Ball next to Sexton, I think, would be really interesting. Like, a big guard who can pass and take some of the tougher defensive assignments. That, to me, would be a little more interesting. And then, you know, Garland's maybe your third guard who comes in. Sexton has made progress every year, so I do think he's going to get there to where he can be hopefully a plus starter, whereas his offense is enough of a level that it offsets his defense, especially if he gets better on defense too. I mean, there's other questions here, though. I mean, Okoro has really done not much, right? Defends competently, but really underwhelming in other respects. So we need to see more.
6.4 PR, 49% true shooting, 12% usage. That 12% usage and really below average efficiency. I mean, there's been a lot of rookies who have fallen into that. This is age 20 season. But and I do think he has given them something on the wing that they haven't had before. But it's also to say that this guy is going to be like a high level of starter. I understand why they drafted him where they did. He was probably the best prospect available at a position of need. But to say, oh, this guy is a solid future starter for sure, it's tough to say that right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean,
29% from three as well, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, getting Allen is pretty exciting, I think, because now they have a way forward that doesn't involve just overpaying Andre Drummond.
Yeah.
And they should be able, I don't think Drummond's going to have a great trade market. I mean, we saw last season, the market for him was a second. I don't know why it would be different this time around. Fitting that 28 isn't going to be, 28 million isn't going to be easy for everyone. Yeah. But I do think there's a potential market where they get something. Nance is a good player on a good contract for two more years. The Kevin Love contract is really the thing weighing them down right now.
Yeah. Now, when I had Chris Fedor on Dunked On to preview the Cavs' argument is, well, that Kevin Love contract hasn't prevented us from doing anything that we wanted to do in free agency. Then again, they basically like didn't sign anyone for the mid-level for like 3 years in a row because they were close
because
to
the luxury tax. Exactly. Yeah.
It's just, I think it's hard for me to see how these guys get to be awesome on either end. Your best case scenario for these guys is that Darius Garland and Colin Sexton turn into Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum. That's your best case scenario. Yeah. Absolute best. The chances of that happening are very, very small. And even then, you're kind of looking at an upside like that Portland team. Like, your defense is never going to be that good because you got those two small guards. And then, or your offense is never going to be that good because you've got to put a bunch of defenders around your two small guards.
Yeah, exactly. The Aminu and Harkless curse.
All right, let me pick a team here. The Houston Rockets.
Yeah.
I do not have them in the bottom tier, which before this season probably actually would be considered an upset. But they've actually been decent to watch this year. Christian Wood has looked good as a young guy. I think they now have replenished the coffers with the Harden trade enough that you can feel pretty decent about that. They're not just like out so many picks going forward, although that's actually an interesting question. Do you think that they have replenished the picks from the Russell Westbrook trade? Like, are they better off having the Brooklyn assets that they do and being out those picks, or would you rather that they just hadn't traded any of those picks?
I think they're probably in a better spot.
I think there's more upside.
I'm trying to think this through. I mean, because those were top four protected picks that they sent to OKC, and they're only good for one draft. So I think they left themselves in a pretty good position. I mean, they could have some really high-end outcomes on these Brooklyn picks that are... Brooklyn's just totally naked 5 years in a row, right? Six actually. So I think they're in a really good position with that. So I would take the Harden haul way over the Westbrook haul as I look at it.
Yeah, I think that seems fair. And so I think they just have shown, you know, Tillman Fertitta, and I think we'll learn a lot more about what's going to happen for the Rockets this offseason, and maybe trading Caris LeVert for Victor Oladipo might augur what that is going to be. But despite Fertitta, I think that they've done a pretty good job of, at least so far, maintaining what Daryl Morey was doing. I think they've had some really nice transactions since Rafael Stone took over. So I think that's a reason for optimism. And like, in the meantime, like, they play hard. They've got guys like Wood once he comes back from the injury. John Wall has been relatively exciting. Eric Gordon actually has shown a pulse this season, despite a podcast partner of mine killing him at every possible opportunity.
If I find that guy, I'll give him what for.
Yeah, I was talking about Danny. Don't worry.
Well, I was doing it too.
No, that's not true. Actually, Danny's pretty high on Eric Gordon. But in any event, yeah. So, but he might even be movable at this point if he keeps playing well. But again, you go back to where are the stars? They're just beginning this rebuilding process. It's probably going to be, and justifiably so, a couple of years of pain after this. Although with Wood and Wall, maybe there won't be able to be that bad. And I just have no idea what Fertitta wants at this point. Like, is he gonna really have them race to the bottom and, you know, be at the salary floor the next couple of years, and that's actually kind of a defensible strategy? Or is he gonna say, no, like, screw you, Daryl Morey and James Harden, I can still have a good team without you guys? No, I really have no idea.
The answer, unfortunately, may be a mixture of both, where he tries to stay at the salary floor but also get into the playoffs every year, which obviously would be untenable.
So yeah, I mean, do you feel similarly about Houston, or should they be lower or higher?
I think that's about right. I would have had them lower before the Harden trade. I think they got so much good stuff in the Harden trade that it positions them so well in the long term. And again, they can put some of those picks in play if an opportunity comes up before then. But I still think these next 2 years, regardless, they're probably just trying to tread water with Wall and Wood and Oladipo, maybe, and basically just trying not to get their asses kicked. And then they'll be further along. Those draft picks will start coming in, and they hopefully can build back up from there.
Yeah. I think Steven Silas has looked pretty good so far as a coach as well.
I would agree with that.
So this is the team that I had in this tier. We did these rankings. You know, I put them together over a course of a week or so. So this is maybe like 10 days old. Mm-hmm. And I'm slightly regretting putting the Charlotte Hornets in this tier. I maybe there's a thought that they should be higher.
I had Charlotte 15th.
Oh, baby.
And I mean, it's entirely because of LaMelo. I mean, like, he's really good, and he's on a trajectory. Like, teenage rookies don't do this, okay? He's on a really impressive trajectory. I'm actually writing about this for The Athletic on Thursday. So, that is definite reason for excitement. And then I think there's some other secondary things. Like, Jay Farrago's pretty good coach, right? Like, you know, that's a positive for these guys. I think they have a couple other younger players who are at least halfway decent. You look at P.J. Washington, Miles Bridges. You know, you have Hayward, whatever he's going to be. I mean, he's under contract for three more years, and he's another good player. And their cap sheet is clean, even with him on the books. So I actually think they're in a pretty good space to get good.
Yeah, I guess the question becomes, really, are they too good this year? Because they didn't sign Gordon Hayward to not push for the play-in.
Yeah.
And they're starting to play well now. And, you know, Hayward's playing it pretty close to an all-star level. He's been outstanding. LaMelo, I mean, that's, to me, probably the biggest reason to move them up is just, like, LaMelo Ball is probably one of the 10 most exciting players in the NBA right now.
Yeah.
And to watch him evolve, I mean, he has just gotten so much better already since the start of the season.
I mean, since we did this a week ago, right?
Yeah.
You know, with him in the starting lineup now, I think Charlotte's moved up. So, yeah, to me, Charlotte's at least mid-tier in this board.
Yeah, I mean, it was unclear. Like, he's got to keep starting now, I think, the rest of the year. Like, there's no way they put him back to the bench and you know, whether they start him at the three and or they just start bringing Devontae Graham off the bench.
Now, to me, the situation reminds me of so much was when we had to start Jaren Jackson during his rookie year. And once it was clear that he was okay in the starting lineup, it was like, okay, that train has left the station. Like, we're never going back.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think you might have been prescient there. And for me, not that you were far behind, but I think we were both pushing LaMelo a lot in the draft. I think this has been, and he's been better than I expected him to be, even though I thought he was the clear number one overall pick.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
I agree with that. I thought he was the number one pick because it wasn't a great draft. And now you look at him and you compare him to other number one picks and you say, no, actually he's playing like just a, he's playing like a number one pick. Like he, you know, compared to almost any year.
Yeah, you know, he's actually starting to get to the foul line at kind of a league average rate, but at, you know, as a ball brother, that's good to see. And, you know, he's one of the best passers. I mean, maybe the one thing to be concerned about is that perhaps his outside shooting has been a little bit over his head and a little bit lucky on that, but he's taken some pretty difficult attempts, and his finishing at the rim has really improved over the last month or so as well, and the defense has been better than expected. Just his overall coachability, ability to fit into a team has been way better. You know, that's something that a lot of people had concerns about, given his long history, and supposedly he interviewed really poorly and all this shit, but I mean, you got to feel pretty good about that. You know, are we talking about him as a possible top 10 player in the NBA? Maybe not, but I'm not ruling it out.
Exactly. And I don't know why you would rule that out at this point.
Yeah. And wherever that journey ends, it's going to be a shitload of fun, which is something we haven't been able to say about the Hornets for a long time.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, yeah, I probably would move them up in retrospect, at least to the top of this tier, but maybe throw them into the tier that we ended with last week, which was Memphis, New Orleans, Atlanta, OKC, Phoenix. That was kind of my up-and-coming teams tier from 14 to 18. I think you got a pretty good argument to throw them in there with the way LaMelo has looked.
Yeah.
And in fact, I'm going to do that right now. Just for posterity, Charlotte Hornets, you are now 19th on this list. Congratulations. And Toronto, Cleveland, Chicago, Houston, you're all bumped down a little bit. All right, let's take a quick break here, and then we can get into the bottom six. This episode of Hollinger & Duncan is brought to you by 1010. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today, using only diamonds responsibly and sustainably sourced from Botswana. 10 design masters have each produced a set of 10 uniquely beautiful diamond rings, and they're available now! Exclusively at BlueNile.com. This exciting collection of truly unique, limited edition diamond engagement rings is available now only at BlueNile.com. Sports fans, the biggest football betting day of the year is coming up. This Sunday, there's only one place that has you covered, one place that we trust, that's BetOnline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at BetOnline.ag and use that promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus. You don't have to sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. And don't forget that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Whatever you want to bet on, BetOnline.ag is your choice, your online sportsbook expert. Okay, where do you want to start here?
So
it seems like we're really in pretty good agreement that we've got six teams left here, and
we have six teams left, and they are the same six. Yeah, yeah. Which of these is the most optimistic of those six as far as their future?
Well, should we name them? Let's name them.
All right.
We got the Knicks. Mm-hmm. We got the Knicks, the Wiz, the Kings, the Magic, the Wolves, and the Pistons.
Yes.
Washington at least does have Bradley Beal, and apparently they're never ever going to trade him, so you can just assume you get to watch Bradley Beal for the next 5 years. You know, lose a shitload of games, but you get to watch Bradley Beal. You let him score 34 a game for the next 5 years.
So there are two ways to spin this. One is that they suck even with Beal, and it's kind of depressing suck too. The other is that they are sitting on something that, if they ever come to their senses, could get them enough assets that we would think of them in the same way we think of Houston right now, which is, okay, now they have this treasure trove of assets. They'll start the rebuild. They'll tank and get a high pick. Like, they'll start this moving forward. But until they move Beal, it's kind of depressing. I mean, yeah, you get to see Beal, and you get to see them lose 140 to 128, but, man...
And as much joy as Bradley Beal is going to give you, Russell Westbrook is going
to suck it right out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then It just seems a little, they have young players, but they kind of eat their young a little bit, I think. Like, they're not even playing Troy Brown and Isak Bonga, and the young players they do have aren't necessarily overwhelming talents, at least it appears. I mean, we'll see what Denny Avdija and Rui Hachimura can become, but they're kind of, their trajectory so far is of kind of a whatever guy, as opposed to somebody who's really going to lift the trajectory of the whole franchise.
Well, and then you just throw in the owner too.
Yeah, which is weird because the hockey team is so well run. But
I know literally nothing about that.
But it's been a 2 decades in pursuit of mediocrity, right? Can we please go 40-42 and get the 8th seed? And that's just our starting point for every decision in every offseason. And yeah.
I mean, it just seems like this train is just continuing down the tracks on a very gentle decline towards sea level, but they're not starting from very high either. And that's just never going to change. There just isn't that creativity. Now, if they get Masai Ujiri, as is rumored, then maybe things could change a little bit. But I mean, I think even what you're saying with Beal and the trade and stuff, the low chance of that happening, the fact that they still have Westbrook there, they don't really have any other good prospects. There are a bunch of other teams that will probably still have more draft assets even after they move Beal. Or if, you know, let's say they trade him for Ben Simmons. Like, are you that excited at that point? Does that change their ranking at all? I don't think so. And you're still looking at 2 or 3 years of pain. And I don't have faith in their organization the way I would a OKC or New Orleans or even a Houston.
Right.
So I think it's just, you might want to say, yeah, Bradley Beal is the best player in this tier and maybe they should be at the top of it. But it's there's a reason I titled this tier Not Much Hope.
Okay. Well, so as I look at this, I think the most hope is probably in Sacramento.
Yeah, De'Aaron Fox is acclaimed for being the best player in this group too. But I also don't want to be overreacting to them going 7-2 lately with like a bunch of really super close wins. I mean, they still have, I think, like the 24th best net rating in the NBA.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah.
And Fox has been dominating lately. But aside from that, there's really, I guess for Halliburton is the other thing.
Yeah, Fox and Halliburton going forward. You have a new front office. You can talk yourself into the idea that maybe things are different.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And I mean, at least
it's a low bar with this group, right?
Yeah, well, this is probably, Sacramento's probably the most fun to watch right now and going forward of any of these six teams.
Yes.
With Halliburton, everyone really enjoys him. And Fox, obviously, you know, Rashawn Holmes to get some dunks for you. Their defense sucks, but they'll get up and down. It's just a question, again, of what the ceiling is, what the direction is. What happened? Marvin Bagley is still kind of this weird albatross around their necks.
Yep.
Where they're like, I mean, really what they probably, and Buddy Hield is too. I mean, I think if you had Fox at the one, Halliburton at the two, Harrison Barnes at the four, the way he's playing really well.
He's having
and
a nice
Rashawn
year.
Holmes. Yeah, Rashawn Holmes at the five, who unfortunately is a free agent after this year, but he's an important piece for them. If you had those four guys and then you bring in, you know, another decent three who could maybe score a little bit, you know, you might actually have some. That might actually be a playoff team. But Buddy Hield can't hit a shot this year. Bagley, they can't defend. He can't play center. They get lit up whenever he does that. They stop doing that now. He's keeping Barnes away from his best position. The spacing is all cramped out because of that. So you kind of healed and Bagley. I mean, it doesn't really seem like those guys are going anywhere necessarily. And they're kind of, and you're not going to defend with Hield and Bagley in the starting lineup. So if they really built the team around Fox and Halliburton and some other solid vets, I think they could move up this list.
Yeah. I feel like I'm just going to like go to the store one day or just like be in a parking lot or something and just like see Nemanja Bjelica just out like what is he doing right now? Where is he?
I mean,
where'd he go?
They would be better if they just played him instead of Bagley. Now,
absolutely.
I mean, now I don't argue with that decision too much because Bagley still has some talent. They gotta really give it a shot with him and see what's happening. But I think we know the answer to that probably. Mm-hmm. So, and I mean, you know, there was a thought that he was going to be like this 20 and 10 guy. Like, he's not even delivering with like the stuff that he was supposed to be good at, not to mention his weaknesses.
Right. I thought he could at least give you empty calories, 20 and 10s. And that hasn't really happened either.
Yeah. It's like, you know, if I'm going to eat this entire bag of Oreos, I at least want it to taste good, right? Like, yes, yes. Tomorrow, like, I'm not going to have any energy or nutrition and I'm going to be fatter, but at least like it'll taste good when I'm eating it. Like, it doesn't even taste good when he's making shots
like,
and getting
like
rebounds.
Eating an entire bag of liver flavored Doritos, right?
not into the organ meats. Yeah, well, I guess as a vegetarian, liver is probably just about like the worst thing you could possibly think of, huh?
Yeah, it's right down there, I would say.
So I'm sure that Knicks fans will probably be aghast that they are at this level. And, so, and I think they might have an argument that they should be like one spot, that they should be in the higher tier. Just because they're playing okay. They got some decent guys. They got a good coach. Like they got two extra picks in the future.
Yeah. So they have a couple arguments for that. One, there's a new front office. So there's some optimism. Two, they have cap space and they still have the specter of like, free agents could actually come to New York who are good and change their trajectory fairly quickly.
And players seem to really like Tibbs a lot, actually, as a possible free agent draw, ironically enough.
Yeah, which is amazing because I guess, I don't know, maybe players who want short careers are targeting him or I don't know. But the in all seriousness, you can make a case for them to certainly be at the front of this group because of that, because, you know, they drafted quickly, looks like a keeper, like there are bursts of competence. You just know the reason they're down here, partly ownership wise you just know Dolan is going to come in here at some point and screw everything up.
It always seems like they have just so many voices and cooks in the kitchen there.
And the inability of this organization going back decades to stick with a plan when something shiny is wiggled in front of their faces, I think really works against them here, especially when you have a coach who is so profoundly win now and seems to have some juice in the organization, as you see with the Rose trade.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a not great omen, even though Rose is taking Austin Rivers minutes, it seems, rather than Quickly.
Yeah, that makes me feel much better. Yeah. Like the first game they played him and Quickly together, which it makes me feel better about that trade.
Yeah, absolutely. But the fact is they gave up a second round pick to go in on this season when, you know, like, okay, you're 11-13 or whatever they were at the time of the trade, mainly because of Jedi 3-point and free throw defense that is completely unsustainable. So I just don't see why this season is a season to shovel your assets toward.
It's so funny. You said, they keep going for the next shiny object and you can't rebuild in New York. And oh, by the way, they haven't even come remotely close to the playoffs since 2013.
Yeah.
Even with this idea that they really only did the go in on veterans 1 year when they like traded for Rose and they signed Noah. But that obviously set them back immensely. So, yeah. And I'm just not like, I don't see a future all-star on this roster. Like at least Washington or Sacramento or even Minnesota have players who are much better than the best player in New York. Julius Randle's been okay. I don't see Barrett as a future all-star. Maybe Randle could sneak in one of these years. Probably not this year, though, because the East is actually like pretty loaded all of a sudden with the all-star game.
Yeah, totally is.
But I'd put them at the top of this group. They do seem to be kind of going in the right direction. And to some degree, it's just, you know, where does that road actually lead you? And also another team that may be suffering from being too good this year.
Potentially. We'll see. Yeah, could definitely hurt their pick. Because as you kind of want to get into the top five this year, it seems.
So that leaves three. Mm-hmm. And I think this would probably be my bottom three. That's Orlando, Minnesota, and Detroit.
Yes.
Who is the worst of those to you as far as like who you'd want to be a fan of going forward?
Man, I think it's going to be hard to be an Orlando fan.
You
know, here's the thing. They're not that bad. They're competent. They're well coached. You know, they have Vooch, who's actually playing at an all-star level even this year. So it's not like they completely suck. There's just there's just nothing to get excited about. Like,
yeah. Now, the fact that you actually have shown any kind of recent competence whatsoever, that puts you in elite company
in this group. That's.
But, I mean, the fact that you actually like made the playoffs the last 2 year and, yeah. and like, if you got healthy with this group, you could probably at least, you know, be in the play-in. Maybe we're being too hard on Minnesota because Karl-Anthony Towns basically just like hasn't played for the last year and they'll look a lot better when he gets back. But ownership is a massive problem in Minnesota. Their books are completely clogged. And D'Angelo Russell, to me, is, I just can't stand watching him just from a personal standpoint, just his lack of effort on defense. And, you know, just, you want to talk empty calories.
Yeah. There are three things really working against them in Minnesota. I mean, four if you count ownership, I guess. But the Russell contract, which is a sort of a continuation of the original sin of the Wiggins contract, and the draft pick they gave up for the Russell contract, and then taking Culver and now Edwards in these two lotteries. I mean, we'll see what Edwards becomes. There's definitely an excitement factor. He still could become good. I mean, you still see these flashes, but he's been, like, overall, he's been pretty bad this year. And to take him over LaMelo, basically because you already had D'Angelo Russell as your tent pole.
Yeah, I got news for you. LaMelo Ball is better than D'Angelo Russell
right now.
Right now.
And it's not
right
even
this
close.
Minute.
And it's not it's, even yeah. close. Yeah, yeah.
100%. Yeah, that was a slight misevaluation there. And for everyone, it's like, oh man, you know, Anthony Edwards, he really gives you these like Wiggins vibes. Why don't you go compare Andrew Wiggins' rookie stats to Anthony Edwards and get back to me? They'd feel lucky right now if he was giving them Wiggins vibes.
Yeah, yeah. His numbers so far have been really unimpressive. So we'll see where that goes. Again, there are other players who have looked horrible as rookies who have turned out to be quite good, but certainly yeah, it's not off to a great start. And then it's just such a soft, underwhelming team all around. Like I would just have such a hard time being a fan of this team right now.
Yeah, Culver I guess plays hard, like Josh Okogie plays hard, but those are bit players who can't score at all. And I would say of these three teams, I believe in Minnesota's management the least at this point. Detroit certainly raised a ton of eyebrows, certainly on this podcast as well, with their offseason moves, but they're actually like kind of working okay right now. Like Jeremy Grant actually looks pretty good. Like Plumlee has been acceptably decent there, and they still are bad anyway, but at least I still feel better about them than Minnesota because they at least have flexibility going forward. Blake Griffin will come off the books, and I believe more in Troy Weaver than I do Gerson Rosas at this point. And ownership is not amazing in Detroit, but it's also not Glenn Taylor, who sadly said the other day that it's not the right time to sell the team.
Yet again. Yeah, I mean, the Pistons are the owner is willing to spend. There are maybe some structural things in the way there in terms of how they're set up, but the moves this off season, Grant obviously has worked out, even though people like us didn't think it would. So credit to them. I still think they made a mistake letting Christian Wood out the door.
Sure.
Getting a second for Rose, that was the right move. I think trading for DeLon Wright was at least somewhat helpful. The Hayes pick is probably the biggest thing working against them right now.
He was awful and now he's hurt. So that, yeah, I mean, just it's kind of looking, until further notice, that's looking like kind of a zero with the number seven pick this year.
Yeah. And again, we'll see, you know, some of these guys come around a little later, but we'll see where that goes. I liked Hayes coming in. I think you were not as big a fan. So right now you got the W on that one.
Well, I think the biggest thing that could happen for Pistons fans would be Michael Tellem getting some good clients over in Europe. maybe someone a little bit better than Davidas Servetus.
Yeah, that might help.
Would you care to guess, just off the top of your head, would you care to guess how many minutes Davidas Servetus has played this year?
Is it exactly zero?
No, he has yet to hit a field goal.
Okay.
But he has, in fact, played 3 minutes on the season. He is 0-for-2 from the field in 3 minutes. So at least he's getting them shots up when he gets out there.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
2 shots every 3 minutes.
Okay, that's a good ratio. Yeah, you see, that's a nice prospect there.
But at least they didn't give up 2 second rounders to get him.
I thought they gave up 3.
I want to say it was 2, but in any event, it was...
It was like 2 to move up, I think it was.
Okay, yeah, maybe that's what it was. RockAuto.com is a family business. They've been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years now. If you're into working on your own car and truck, saving some money both in labor and on parts, go to RockAuto.com and you can shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Just put in the make and model of your car. It's everything from engine control modules to brake parts to tail lamp, motor oil, even new carpet. Their catalog is really easy to navigate and the prices are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. There's no reason to go to the auto parts store in person, especially these days, just to find out that they don't have your part and they're going to order it online the same way that you could with RockAuto.com for a less expensive price and without going to the store. So go to RockAuto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car and truck, right locked on in their How Did You Hear About Us box, so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, RockAuto.com. So I think I still would have to have Detroit last, just because Carl Anthony Towns is pretty good and Minnesota will look a little bit better at some point. And, you know, Carl Towns is like a fun guy to watch play to me, at least on the offensive end.
But I also feel like that works against them, though, right? Because the fact that Towns is there, they're like locked into this strategy of we have to keep ourselves in a position to try to win, to keep Towns happy so he doesn't demand a trade or leave in 2024 or whatever. And it's sort of forced themselves to paint them in the corner that they're now in. And they're just going to stay on this treadmill until the point where Towns is probably...
Well, no, maybe Minnesota should be last because they're out that fucking pick.
Next year,
yeah. We haven't even talked about that yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, it's funny you mentioned the original sin of the Wiggins contract. I was like, there's about 4 different ways you could have gone for original sin. There was the original sin of the Gorgui Dieng contract, which became James Johnson, which now is Rubio, who's under contract for another year, and now they can't sign anybody in free agency next year. You know, there's the original sin of... We got to placate Carl Towns, so let's, we can't get D'Angelo Russell in free agency, so now let's trade a bunch of stuff to get him. I mean, there's quite the catalog there in Minnesota. So, who is last for you? What's your, between Orlando, Minnesota, and Detroit?
I think I got to put Minnesota last. I could make a case for Orlando. I don't think Detroit should be last. I think there's enough to watch there for at least the next couple of years.
There's at least there's like a hope that the organization might be competent.
Yeah.
Whereas we know that the organization in Minnesota is not competent.
That's one of the biggest things. It's just you know in Minnesota it's just going to be
coach,
what it is.
Yeah. Their coach also is. I mean, I don't want to say he's bad, but he's certainly not good.
Yeah.
I mean, he'd probably be at the bottom of our coach rankings again as he was last year. He hasn't done anything to change that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's going to be a really interesting thing. That's kind of the next test, I think, for the Roses regime is what they do about that over the next 6 months, shall we say? Because and whether Taylor lets them bring in their own coach or not.
Yeah, I mean, because that might be the last bullet already that they. I mean, if the team gets sold, you have to imagine that it's going to be cleaning house. But, you know, Glenn Taylor wants them to not. That's part of why he can't sell the team, because he wants them to like have all these like post-hoc.
Attach all these strings to it, right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So this will be a perfect companion to what we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. It is time to rule a team out of the 2021 playoffs. We last did this on January 20th, so almost a month ago, actually.
Wow. Okay.
Or I guess 30 days ago. And I ruled out the OKC Thunder, and you presciently ruled out the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Which is unfortunate, because I was hoping I could pick them today, but I can't, because I already did.
Yeah, well, OKC, I mean, they're what, 10-13 right now? So they are making me sweat a little bit, but yeah, not that much, because their point differential is like third worst in the league. They're going to regress, and they're going to trade guys. I still feel comfortable there.
Yeah.
So I will go first, though. Okay. And pick the Eastern Conference cellar dwellery Detroit Pistons.
Really? Okay.
Despite a rousing win over the Brooklyn Nets, they're just not going in that direction. They have the worst record in basketball. I think they do, right?
I think that, hang on, they're 6-18. What's Minnesota? They're tied for the worst record. 6-18. Yes. Detroit and Minnesota.
Oh, yeah. I guess I do still have Minnesota on the board, too. But I still, you know, the 6 net rating with Karl Anthony Towns, obviously, I would feel very comfortable picking either of these teams, but I will go with the Detroit Pistons here.
Really? Yeah. Okay. You know, they played the league's toughest schedule so far.
Killian Hayes is coming back in March.
That would be so. But the other thing
traded Derrick Rose.
Other thing I was going to say is, yeah, they without Hayes for a while, they do have an opportunity to rack up some wins here before he comes back.
Yeah, but it just seems you just know what the direction is here, though, right? Like, I think that's what it comes down to is that they're not going to be pushing. They wouldn't have traded Rose. They're going to be pushing, and Minnesota is going to be pushing.
So. And there's a chance some of these good stories from the early season cool off a little bit, like especially, you know, is Jeremy Grant going to keep shooting this well? I think that's at least a question. Wayne Ellington certainly would be in the same boat. So,
yeah, another possible trade candidate as well.
For sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Probably another guy they get a second round pick for and would likely seek to do so, especially since he's somewhat blocking Svi Mykhailiuk right now.
So who are you going to pick then after all this?
So I'm actually on the fence between two teams here because I think Orlando actually has been more depressing in a lot of ways. And
yeah. Yeah. I mean, that they were certainly in the mix for me as well.
I don't think they're going to put any assets in play to try to salvage this season, certainly. And they could be another team where they look to sell in terms of Evan Fournier, right? Who's going to be a free agent. I think they have to look at that. I think you're going to hear Aaron Gordon's name come up. I don't know if they're going to look to move him or not. You know, that Fultz is out for the whole year. They're playing Cole Anthony and two-way guy Frank Mason. And it seems like that's just what they're going to go with, right? So it's hard to get super excited. Like, they're 9-16 and Vucevic has played every single game. So
yeah, I think there's a pretty clear bottom four between OKC, Detroit, Minnesota, and Orlando.
Yeah.
I think everyone else, you know, then you got to start getting into like Cleveland or Chicago or Sacramento or something. But yeah, so who's your pick then?
I'm going to go with Orlando. Yeah. I mean, they're 29th in net rating, and I just don't see how it gets better. I mean, you know, okay, Al Farouq Aminu is coming back from injury. Let's turn this baby around. Like, I just don't see what piece is coming in that can change things.
Yeah, and how long can he hold out against the curse of the Magic power forwards anyway?
He's dealing with forces far more powerful than he, right?
Yeah, I mean, God, that has just been an absolute horror movie so far, but. Yeah, all right. Well, that'll do it then. OKC and Detroit. This is interesting, actually. You and I have no overlap.
Which is amazing.
But I think we'll start to get some next time.
We're going to start picking each other's teams now.
Yeah. So what did you write about for The Athletic this week before we go?
So I wrote about the Utah Jazz and how they have established themselves as a legit championship contender. And Rudy Gobert is a stealth MVP candidate. And I wrote a little bit about the Derrick Rose trade as well. And then coming up, as I mentioned, possibly by the time you listen to this, going to be writing about LaMelo Ball in Charlotte.
Yeah, you said it had a line in your piece about Utah that if this isn't a championship contender, I don't know what one looks like. That's going to be a subject to disagreement. We don't have time to get into it here, but I think I have a feeling they're going to be pretty good throughout the rest of this regular season, and that'll be a subject of contention between us then as we go forward here.
All right. Contention. I like it.
All right. Thanks so much, everyone, for listening. And we'll be back next week. We'll talk to y'all then.